Here is your Radio Theater Channel weekly podcast for download. The RTC still has the very best old-time radio on the live streaming. And if it's music you love, tune in to the RTC Music Channel, where this link and many others are on our website at oldtimeradiolisten.com. Now, here's Jim.
Welcome to the RTC Weekly Download. I'm Jim Dolan. Well, today we have a story of two detectives, one sedentary and the other one quite active. But both of them have quite active brains, as you will soon see, as we listen to Sherlock Holmes and the Adventures of Nero Wolfe. First, Sherlock Holmes. The story is a case of identity, and the stars, John Gielgud and Ralph Richardson.
The Adventures of Sherlock Holmes, the original and immortal stories of Sir Arthur Conan Doyle, dramatized anew, with Sir Ralph Richardson as Dr. Watson and Sir John Gielgud in the role of Sherlock Holmes.
I want to tell you this humble tale of poor Miss Sutherland, of the Duchess of Devonshire hat and the grey feather boa. Holmes solved her problem by sheer deduction, without moving once from Baker Street. So now I ask you to come back with me to those old chambers of ours on an early spring evening long ago, when we sat smoking contentedly together on either side of a cheerful fire. What is it, Holmes? What are you looking at?
A client, if I'm not mistaken, Watson. There, do you see her down there in the street, coming up towards our front door?
What, the young woman with the big hat?
Fidgeting nervously on the pavement. I've seen those symptoms before.
And what does fidgeting on the pavement mean, pray?
Usually an affaire du cœur, Watson. She'd like some advice, no doubt, but she isn't now quite sure that the matter isn't rather too delicate for her to reveal, after all. Ah! But now she plunges like a swimmer leaving the bank.
Oh, my soul, you really are impossible. I suppose you can find some further inference from the very ringing of the bell.
Of course. Even there one may discriminate. A bell may be rung in 100 different ways. On this occasion we may take it that there is a love matter, but that somewhat sizable maiden isn't so much angry as perplexed or grieved.
Holmes.
Will you kindly admit her, my dear fellow, and then we can resolve our doubts.
Of course. I'm all eagerness.
Good evening. May I see Mr. Sherlock Holmes, sir?
Yes, certainly. And the name, please?
Miss Mary Sutherland.
Oh, come in, Miss Sutherland. This is Mr. Holmes. I'm his friend and partner. Miss Mary Sutherland, Holmes.
Ah, Miss Sutherland, good evening. Do sit down.
Good evening.
Don't you find that with your short sight it's a little trying to do so much typewriting?
Well, I did it first, sir, but I got... Mr. Holmes, you must have heard of me. How did you know that?
It's my business to know things. Otherwise, why should you come to consult me? This gentleman here is Dr. Watson, by the by. You can rely entirely upon his discretion.
Thank you, sir. You see, I came because I'd heard of you, Mr. Holmes. I knew you helped people who were in trouble.
And what trouble are you in, Miss Sutherland?
Oh, sir. I'd give anything if you could solve it for me. I'm not rich, Mr. Holmes, but I've still got 100 or 200 in my own right. I'd give it all to know what's become of Mr. Angel.
We can discuss the financial aspect later, Miss Sutherland. But tell me, why did you come away to consult me in such a very great hurry?
What? You know that too, Mr. Holmes.
No doubt Dr. Watson understands how I know it, eh, Watson?
Oh, Holmes, don't rub it in. Now, I gather it's true, Miss Sutherland?
Yes, sir. I did bang out of the house, rather. Mr. Windibank took it all that easy somehow. Wouldn't go to the police or anything. So I just donned my things and came right away to you, Mr. Holmes.
Mr. Windibank, you said?
Yes. He's my father.
Surely your stepfather, Miss Sutherland, since the name's different.
That's right. Seems funny, don't it? Because I call him father, and he's only really 5 years older than I am.
Indeed. And your mother's still alive.
Oh, yes. Of course, I don't mind saying, Mr. Holmes, that I wasn't best pleased when she married again, particularly so soon after father's death, and a man that was nearly 15 years younger than she was.
You mentioned having a little income of your own.
My Uncle Ned in Auckland left it me. It's in stock or some such, and I can only touch the interest, which is about 100 a year.
Oh, a gratifying sum for a single girl, Miss Sutherland.
Well, Mr. Holmes, I really don't feel I need it much, you know. So I'll let Mr. Windibank, that's father, I'll let him draw it for me, and he gives some of it to mother and keeps the rest. Kind of makes me feel I'm not a drain on them living at home. I can make my tuppence a sheet from my typewriting, see?
Quite so.
But, Mr. Holmes, I'm so worried. If only you could help me find Mr. Angel.
Well, let's first hear all about his disappearance. What is his full name, may I ask?
Hosmer. Hosmer Angel. I used to think it was such a nice name. You see, I met him at the gasfitter's ball.
Miss Sally, may I?
Oh, Mr. Angel. Again? It's the sixth dance you've asked me for, Mr. Angel.
Maybe I might ask for another one, too, before it's done, Miss Sutherland. Maybe another two.
There only are another two, Mr. Angel.
Well, then. Maybe I might even ask to call on you tomorrow, Miss Sutherland.
Oh, Mr. Angel.
Couldn't you call me Hosmer?
Hosmer?
Mary. Lovely floor, Mary.
Lovely, Hosmer.
Lovely band, Mary.
Lovely, Hosmer. I wish it could go on and on forever, Hosmer. Just on and on forever. On and on. And in a kind of way it did, you see, Mr. Holmes. Because I used to meet him for walks in the dark evenings. And we'd talk and talk about the ball and the way he'd taken me for all those dances.
Most interesting, I'm sure. And when your stepfather came back from France?
Well, it had to end then, of course, because father didn't like young men at the house. But then he went away again, you see.
Oh.
So her Hosmer used to come as before.
And did he write to you in the intervals?
Oh, yes. And so did I. I brought his letters with me, Mr. Holmes. There you are. I thought you might manage to find one of your famous clues in them.
Well, I've no doubt I may, Miss Sutherland. Thank you so much. And then?
He asked me to marry him, Mr. Holmes.
Aha.
With your stepfather's consent, of course, Miss Sutherland.
Oh, no, sir. Mr. Windibank would never have given it. After he'd gone to France, Hosmer came to the house one night in dreadful earnest and made me swear with my hands on the testament that I'd always be true to him, whatever happened. He said, could we be married before father came back from his latest trip? And I said, yes. And mother was all right, too. She was on our side, and so...
Well, Miss Sutherland?
It was all arranged for last Friday. Very quietly at St. Saviour's near King's Cross. Oh, Mr. Holmes!
Oh, well, now, please, please, calm yourself, Miss Sutherland. Watson, your handkerchief, perhaps, if you'd be so good.
Yes, yes, yes. There you are, my dear. There.
Thank you, gentlemen. You're very kind. You see, Hosmer came for mother and me in a hansom, and he put us both into it. Then he got into a four-wheeler, because it was the only other cab in the street. And when we got to the church, Mr. Holmes...
The cab was empty.
Mr. Holmes, how did you guess? It's true, Doctor. He just disappeared.
Good heavens.
And I've never seen him since. I'm so afraid for him.
Seems to me that you've been most shamefully treated, Miss Sutherland.
Oh, no, sir, no. Hosmer was good and kind. Something dreadful's happened to him. I know he'd never forsake me of his own will. You must find him, Mr. Holmes.
Well, I'll do my best, Miss Sutherland. I'll most certainly do my very best. You can let me have a description of Mr. Angel, can't you?
I put an advertisement in the papers the other day. There it is, Mr. Holmes. You'll find it there.
Ah, yes, thank you. Dark whiskers, unusually soft voice.
He'd had the quinsy when he was young, and it left him with a weak throat.
I see. And his address?
I never knew it.
Oh. Well, what about the letters you exchanged?
I used to write to the post office in Leadenhall Street, marked to be called for.
Ah, and his letters to you are unheaded, I see. Very well, Miss Sutherland. You've made your statement very well, very clearly, and I shall certainly do all I possibly can for you. You'll leave me your address, won't you, so that I can get in touch with you?
Oh, here it is, sir. In my bag. I wrote it down before I left.
Splendid.
Thank you, Mr. Holmes. You've been so kind.
Not at all. Goodbye.
Good day, sir. Good day, Dr. Watson.
Good day, my dear. Oh, Holmes, what a sad story. Have you a theory?
No doubt I shall have, Watson. We must think. Will you have a pinch of snuff?
Huh? Oh, thanks. I say, what a magnificent box. Old gold with an amethyst?
Yes. Oh, of course, I forgot to tell you, Watson. It arrived this morning by special messenger while you were out. A little souvenir from the King of Bohemia in return for my assistance in the case of the Irene Adler papers.
Holmes. From the glories of Bohemia to the gas fitter's ball. From the courts of Europe to poor Mary Sutherland.
Poor Mary Sutherland. Yes, poor indeed, my dear Watson. Once long ago, at the time when we first met in the Milverton case, I said I think that there were crimes that weren't crimes in any recognized sense.
What, is this one of them? You mean you've solved it, Holmes?
Well, I have a glimmering, at least. A glimmering, my dear fellow. Pass me my violin, will you? It only remains to think for a little, Watson. It only remains to think.
Capital snuff, this capital.
Bless you, my dear fellow.
As it happened, a professional case of my own of some gravity at the time, and I had to spend all that night and all the next day at the bedside of my patient. But I confess that during the long, dark watches, my thoughts went back and back to Miss Sutherland and her problem. For all the preposterous hat and the vacuous face, there'd been something rather touching in the simple faith of that unusual visitor of ours. At last, however, I found myself free, with my patient out of danger. I hurried to Baker Street. There was Holmes, half asleep in his armchair and half invisible through the fumes from his pipe. A formidable array of bottles and test tubes told me that he'd spent the day in one of the chemical experiments that was so dear to him.
Well, well, my dear Holmes. Wake up, old fellow. Have you solved it?
Hey, what? Oh, it's you, Watson. What's the matter?
Well, I mean the mystery, Holmes. Miss Sutherland.
Well, oh, sit down, my dear Watson. You seem quite agitated.
Well, it's absurd, I know, but I just can't get that girl out of my mind, poor thing. Such an idiotic problem, somehow.
It was never a problem at all, my dear fellow. You'll find a parallel case in Andover in 77, if you consult my index. And there was something of the same sort at The Hague only last year. The idea is really quite old, you know.
Well, I'll confess it's new to me, at least. Whatever it is.
Well, it has one or two unusual features, perhaps, which aren't without interest. Oh, I'm awake now. I'm sorry. Pour yourself some whiskey and soda, my dear Watson. And let me give you a little lesson in observation while we're waiting.
Waiting? For what? For whom?
For someone who may help us to lay our hands on that missing Hosmer Angel. The only drawback is that even when we do find him, I'm afraid there isn't any law that can touch the scoundrel.
What puzzles me were his motives. The girl said herself there was no question of money. If he'd even married her first and then deserted her, I'd have understood it better.
You seem to be singularly interested in the technique of matrimonial desertion, my dear Watson.
My dear fellow. I'm only intrigued by the mystery.
Quite so. Yes, you might pour me a whiskey too, will you?
Sorry.
We must take first things first, Watson. We must consider the fair damsel in some detail.
Well, I did try to notice one or two things about her.
Excellent. For example?
Well, one of her gloves was worn through at the right forefinger, for instance. And they'd been good gloves to start with. So I guessed that she was fairly well-to-do in a kind of jolly, easy-going way, a bit careless and so forth. I mean, before she told us about her 100 a year.
Admirable. You progress, Watson. Nothing else about the worn glove?
No, I can't say there was particularly. Oh, but I did see the little dents of the pince-nez marks on either side of her nose. I wasn't quite as surprised as she was when you told her she was short-sighted.
Splendid, splendid, my dear fellow. And the typewriting, of course, and the fact that she'd come to see us in a great hurry, you perceived all that naturally.
No, not a bit of it. You had me there, I'm afraid.
Ah, well then let me give you a golden hint, Watson. Always look at a woman's sleeve first. With a man, it's perhaps better to take the knees of his trousers.
Ah, but I did look at her sleeve, a kind of purple plush.
Exactly, and there's hardly a better material for showing traces. The double line a little above the wrist was most beautifully defined, just where the typist presses against the table, of course.
Oh, come, Holmes. There must be dozens of other activities where the same thing happens.
What, for instance?
A sewing machine, say, of the hand type.
Well done. That leaves an exactly similar mark, but only on the left arm, my dear fellow, and on the side of it furthest from the thumb, not right across the broadest part, as it was in this case.
All right, you win. But the hurry she'd come in.
After the sleeve, the boots, Watson.
Well, I did glance at her feet.
Yes, to consider the trim turn of her ankle, no doubt, whereas I observed that her boots, although very similar, didn't match. And that one was buttoned only in the two lower buttons out of the five, and the other only at the first, third, and fifth, showing plainly
that she dressed quickly, except that it could also illustrate my own point from the gloves, that she was easygoing and careless.
The gloves confirmed the haste, not the carelessness. What you didn't notice, Watson, was that both the glove and the finger through it were slightly stained with violet ink, so she'd written something before leaving home, but after being fully dressed to go out. She'd written in a hurry and dipped her pen too deep, and it must indeed have been on this very morning, or else the mark wouldn't have been so clear.
Ah, that was the address she wrote down and gave us from her bag.
Exactly.
Well, I give your best again, Holmes.
Thank you. It was all quite elementary. You know, you're really an excellent fellow, Watson.
Indeed, and why, pray?
Why, to put up with me as you do when I'm so unbearably priggish.
Ah, well, let's get back to the missing bridegroom, Holmes.
The redoubtable Hosmer Angel. Very well, then. And about him, Watson...
Well?
I'm afraid I can tell you practically nothing at all beyond what you can read yourself from the girl's description in the advertisement and from what his own letters imply.
The description's commonplace enough.
It isn't without some points of interest, however. Just read it.
About 5'7". Bushy black side whiskers, moustache, tinted glasses, unusually soft voice. Mm-hmm. Hardly much there, I'd say.
And the letters to Miss Sutherland?
Singularly trite in sentiment.
Except that he quotes Balzac once. Anything else?
Well, they're typewritten.
Splendid, Watson, which in itself is hardly notable, perhaps except that...
The signature's typewritten too. Mm. Now that is strange.
Just so. And here, if I'm not mistaken, is the visitor I was expecting.
Not Hosmer Angel himself, Holmes.
James Windibank, the girl's father, Watson. Or rather, stepfather. It's always as well to do business with male relatives in cases like this. I wrote to him immediately and had a reply to say that he'd call on us at 6:30 this evening. Will you kindly let him in?
Yes, yes, of course.
Shall I describe him to you, Watson, before he knocks?
But how can you? You've never seen him.
Nevertheless, you will find him tallish, clean-shaven, somewhat loud-voiced, and with a pair of wonderfully penetrating eyes. You'll see, Watson, here he comes.
Mr. Sherlock Holmes?
Good heavens.
Come in, Mr. Windibank. My colleague here, Dr. Watson, seems a little stunned by your appearance. I really can't think why.
Well, Watson, I think it's a bit thick, Mr. Holmes. I really can't apologize, see?
Why, what for, Mr. Windibank? Do sit down, won't
well,
you?
Well, that girl of mine, my stepdaughter, troubling you with all this.
On the contrary, it's been no trouble at all.
Well, Mary's very excitable and impulsive, see? She would come to you.
Well, why not? It's what I'm here for.
Well, it's nice to have these family troubles made public, you know? Besides, it's just a useless expense. How could you possibly find this scoundrel, Hosmer Angel?
But I have every reason to believe that I have found him, Mr. Windibank.
What? Well, I'm delighted to hear it.
I thought you would be. Watson, do come and join us. Sit down, my dear fellow. Don't stand staring there now. Let me tell you both a little story.
A story, Holmes?
A fairy story. Prefaced by some remarks, perhaps, on the typewriter and its relationship to crime.
Look here, what's all this about?
Now, no two typewriters are quite alike, you know, Mr. Windibank. They are, in fact, as distinctive as handwriting to the expert eye. Now, in these groups of letters I have before me, You'll notice the broken E's and the R that has lost its serif. Interesting, eh, Mr. Windibank?
What's all this fantastic talk? If you can catch this awesome range, you'll catch him. Let me know when you've done it.
Certainly. Watson, will you lock the door, please?
What? Lock it?
Mr. Windibank, I have caught Hosmer Angel.
Well, how do you mean?
Well, come, come, come. This won't do. It really won't. It's only too clear.
Confound you, Mr. Sherlock Holmes. It isn't actionable.
No, I'm very much afraid that it isn't. But between ourselves, it was about as mean a trick as I ever met in my life.
But I say, Holmes, what's all this about? What do you mean?
I mean, Watson, that my fairy story is about a wicked stepfather who had 100 a year only so long as his wife's daughter stayed with him. He was terrified lest she'd get married someday. So he begins by denying her any form of entertainment where she might possibly meet personable young men. And when he discovers that that won't work forever...
He becomes a personable young man himself, upon my soul.
Just so, with the connivance of his wife, who seems to be as mean as he is, he adopts characteristics exactly opposite to his own. A soft voice, tinted glasses to cover his bright eyes, meets her only in the dark.
It's a joke. It was only a joke at first.
Oh, really, was it? To make a fool of that poor, simple girl, win her confidence and her love, make her swear on the testament that she'd always be true to you, and then, when your own continual visits to France became too much trouble, to take her to the very door of the church, Mr. Windibank, and then conveniently disappear by that old trick of stepping into one door of a four-wheeler and out of the other.
By Jove, Holmes!
You sicken me, Windibank. Why, you knew perfectly well she'd never forget that one romance of hers. You knew she was tied to you for at least 10 years to come by the tragedy of Hosmer Angel's disappearance. And all for the sake of £100 a year, you greedy wretch.
All right. It may be so, or it may not. But it's you that's breaking the law, and not me. As long as you keep that door locked, you'll leave yourself open to an action for illegal restraint.
Unlock it, Watson.
Ah.
No, the law can't touch you, Windibank. You're quite right there. But if that poor girl, Mary Sutherland, had a brother or a friend, he ought to lay a horsewhip across your miserable shoulders. By Jove, I've half a mind to...
So have I, Holmes. Confound it. Here's my hunting crop.
No, no, you can't. Here, leave go of me. Take your eyes off me. I'll have the law on you.
Let him go, Watson. He really isn't worth a charge for assault.
Upon my life, the fellow positively made me ill, Holmes. Of all the... scoundrelly tricks.
Just so, my dear fellow. I suspected it from the start, of course. And when I got his letter confirming our appointment tonight...
Typed, of course.
On the very machine that Angel's letters have been written on to disguise his own handwriting, which she'd have known, of course. What a cowardly trick, eh, Watson?
Oh, but Mary Holmes, Miss Sutherland, what are you going to say to her?
I've decided, Watson, that this is a case in which I shall have to disappoint my client. What can one tell her? If I gave her the truth, she wouldn't believe it. There's a Persian saying, there is danger for him who taketh the tiger cub, and danger also for whoso snatches a delusion from a woman. We must leave poor Mary with her memory of Hosmer.
And so ended the tragedy of the gas fitter's ball.
Lovely floor, Mary.
Lovely, Hosmer.
Lovely band, Mary.
Lovely, Hosmer. I wish it could go on and on forever, Hosmer. Just on and on forever. On and on.
The Adventures of Sherlock Holmes, based on the original stories of Sir Arthur Conan Doyle, have been dramatized anew with original music composed by Sidney Torch. Sir Ralph Richardson played the part of Dr. Watson, and Sir John Gielgud that of Sherlock Holmes. The program was produced by Harry Allen Towers.
That was Sherlock Holmes and A Case of Identity from 1954. Now let's move on to Rex Stout's Nero Wolf and the Adventures of Nero Wolf. This one is called The Phantom Fingers.
Ladies and gentlemen, the ringing of that phone bell means mystery, adventure.
Nero Wolf's office, Archie Goodwin speaking. What? You're expecting Mr. Wolf at your place in 3 hours? Your place is where? Yes. Well, I'm expecting Hedy Lamarr in 15 minutes. Yeah, but, mister, we're both out of luck.
Archie, what are you babbling about?
There's a character on the phone who's laboring under the naive delusion that you're about to make a trip upstate.
His name?
Finley, he said.
In that case, he's quite correct.
Yeah, he's quite the, yes, Mr. Finley. Mr. Wolf will be there. Yeah, goodbye.
I shall need some beer, Archie.
The bottle opener's in the right-hand drawer.
Thank you.
What one of us needs is a psychiatrist. You're voluntarily leaving your happy home, exposing yourself to the elements, entrusting your only life to a savage automobile?
I am.
Ho-ho-ho. Somebody's offered you the United States Treasury, huh?
Mr. Finley happens to grow orchids. Among them, he has developed a plant possessing spurred lobelia. I have an opportunity to purchase a couple of the plants, therefore...
I don't believe it.
But, Archie, according to the reports I have received, he has produced a strain of black cypripedium.
Oh, well, in that case. But, Mr. Wolf, while it's true that black may be the color of your true love's hair, it is also true that black is the color of funerals. Ladies and gentlemen, it's the detective genius who rates the knife and fork the greatest tools ever invented by man. The ponderous, brilliant, and unpredictable Nero Wolf, created by Rex Stout and brought to you in the person of Mr. Sidney Greenstreet. The beginning of the case of the Phantom Fingers actually had nothing to do with black orchids. The first act was played in an old house at the end of an old dirt road. It was short and simple. As short as life. And as simple as murder.
Joe, I didn't believe the letters I got. Didn't believe them until now. I've been a lonely man. No wife, children. Joe, it was all coming to you after I died. There was no need for you to steal from me. All you had to do was wait. Joe, that gun. Put it down. No.
Archie.
Yes, Mr. Wolf.
How much longer?
Oh, an hour, maybe. Why?
I'm a fool.
Yeah, well, payday's tomorrow. I refuse to agree with you. Besides, the trip's been fine so far, huh? So there's snow on the road, but...
Phooey.
Well, it's nice snow. Pretty soon it'll be spring, and in the spring...
If you mention old Titmouse once more, I shall strangle you.
No, it's against the law. But you know, if that snow melts much faster, the trees won't look so pretty.
Trees? Are they really necessary?
Uh-huh. People cut them down and make paper out of them. And they take the paper and make dollar bills. Mr. Wolf, we're surrounded by future thieves.
I prefer the finished product. What on earth is that?
Sounds like a river.
Indeed.
Except there aren't any rivers around here.
Hey.
Yeah?
Up ahead.
What? Huh?
It's a river. Only it isn't a river.
It's wet.
It's wet and it's got waves on it. Had to start raining, too.
Nature. Fooey. The
road behind us is covered with water. We'll just have to keep going onward and upward.
Would you like to recite Excelsior to me?
Why, sure. Shades of night were falling fast when through an alpine village passed...
An idiot of your caliber, no doubt.
Oh.
An infernal engine has died.
No, no, the road dips up ahead. And where it dips, there's a junior Mississippi growing up.
Splendid.
Not so splendid. We can't go back and we can't go forward.
Why not?
They didn't build this model to swim.
No foresight. What do we do now?
Well, we could abandon the car and,
Walk, are you mad? Are you seriously suggesting I end out in a foot race with the flood?
Yeah, well, not seriously, but,
You've decided to give the car a swimming lesson?
No. There's what looks like a cow path leading off the highway. To your right. Maybe it's a road.
We progress. We now follow the footstep of the cow.
Ah, it is a road. An old dirt road. Not only that, it goes up.
Is that good?
Theoretically. We might get above the water that way.
And if the theory fails?
Mr. Wolf, how are you on the Australian crawl? Hey. There's been another car on this road before us. You can see the tire tracks in the mud.
Interesting. An indication that there are other maniacs about. I myself would not have chosen this particular spot to picnic in.
Well, it's not that. There's somebody lying on the road.
People have peculiar habits. Ignore him and drive on.
Uh-uh. Hold on a moment. Mr. Wolf, you better come out here.
My madness has its limits. The answer is no. Serious, Archie?
Very serious.
Oh, very well.
Good
heavens.
Yeah, still alive, but...
The man's been shot. He's mumbling.
Joe.
Yelling for Joe.
Be still.
Don't forgive stealing.
So much for that. Pick him up, Archie. Put him in the car.
Might be bad for him to be moved.
No. There is nothing that can be bad for him. He's dead. Is this blasted road leading anywhere, Archie?
Well, seems to be a clearing up ahead. Maybe... Hey, it's a house.
Splendid.
I'm not so sure. It's perched up on top of a cliff, surrounded on three sides by nothing. On the side facing us, there's a deep ravine and a small wooden bridge.
An island in the air.
Yeah. High enough to keep above water, maybe, but... Now, that bridge doesn't look too good. Rain may have weakened it.
You have no choice, Archie. I have no intention of being drowned in these barbaric surroundings. The bridge, Archie.
Okay. Hold on. Ooh, the thing's collapsing under us.
Our momentum, Joseph.
Well, if it doesn't, 37 blondes are going to be wearing black. Correction, 38. I forgot the one in Gimble's bargain basement. Hey, we made it. The bridge will never be the same, though. There's a car ahead of us in front of the house.
The car from which our friend, our dead friend, was thrown. Only one set of car tracks in the mud along the road, and here...
And all we have to do is walk in, ask for the owner of the house, and,
Possibly, and possibly not. Archie, go through the corpse's pockets.
Oh, that's not cricket. Yeah, all right, I'm going through. Yeah, not much on him. Handkerchief, silver, driver's license. The name was, James Miller. Address Garner Lane, Walden. Now, I've got an idea this is Garner Lane, Mr. Wolf.
In which case, someone named Joe was looking after the house for him, committed theft, and murdered Miller. Miller's body was then dumped on the road in the hopes that the floods would wash the body away. No one at the house seems to have noticed our arrival.
Nope. Well, let's go in and ask for Joe, huh?
Very well. Hard. With the bridge down, there's absolutely no way of getting on or off this bridge.
Except for a mountain goat. I don't know any mountain goats. I used to know a plain goat once, though.
Indeed.
He ran at the Fifth at Jamaica.
Stop maundering.
I never maunder. Also, I never win bets on horse races. That's why I continue to work for you.
That is also why you had better ring the doorbell.
Okay. Nobody's going to break a leg rushing to open the door.
I suppose you try it. I have had more than enough of the weather.
Is that polite? Besides, the killer may have some more bullets in that gun.
Are you afraid?
Sure.
Foray, the door, Archie.
But old Dr. Titmouse would say... Well, never mind. Hey, somebody was careless leaving the door open like that. On the other hand, has a spider ever shut its web? The answer is no. Are we flies? Yes.
Out of my way, Archie.
There are lights up ahead. Must be the living room.
Excuse me.
Sure, you're excused.
Do you live here, sir?
Do we... No, don't you?
Of course not. This is very strange. I came out to see the people who live here, or the person. I found the door open and no one about. I've been sitting in this corner now for a long time.
Well, it's a pity no one offered you a plum pie. Then you could have stuck in your thumb.
You saw no one enter, sir?
No one at all. I didn't want to go any further. It would have seemed like prying.
Perhaps you had better come along with us.
Well, all right. You know, this place, it has an evil atmosphere.
Certainly has. What it needs is fresh air.
Fury, this would be the living room door. A job.
It is. Looks as pretty as a picture.
Hello.
Well, just think of it. 5 minutes ago, you know, I didn't know you existed. And you didn't know I existed. And now...
Archie, your existence would have a sudden end, then that you keep quiet. Excuse us for intruding, Miss...
Intruding? Oh, but I really should ask you to excuse me.
You do not live here?
I wish I did, but... You see, I've been out walking. I live maybe a mile from here, and then when the flood began, I thought I'd come in here and stay for a while.
And you found?
An empty house.
That's not what I found. As old Dr. Titmouse has often said...
Go through the rest of the house, Archie.
Go through the rest... Yeah, well, never mind. I'll...
What sound?
Somebody's walking. Coming downstairs. I'll go and see.
Hey, you! Come on into the living room. Meet your guests in one or several pieces, as you prefer.
You what? Oh. Hiya, folks.
A host at last.
That's very funny. I think I'll laugh.
May I ask why?
Because this here ain't my dump. I was just casing the joint. I mean, I was just taking a stroll.
Through the house?
I'm eccentric.
Oh, clever. However, I think you'd better stay.
Why?
Because you may turn out to be the owner of this house after all. I rather think introductions are in order.
Well, I'm Peg Shirley.
Yeah, my name is Wagner.
Joseph Wagner?
Lewis.
How about you, Stroller?
Cregan. Sam Cregan.
Peg, Louis, Sam. Mr. Cregan, while you were strolling upstairs, did you notice anyone else about?
No.
There was no one outside when Archie and I entered. The bridge is down, effectively cutting us off from further visitors. We may assume, therefore, that we are the only people in or about this house.
Yeah, it's cozy, ain't it?
Which further means that one of you three is a murderer.
What did you say?
The murderer is the person who owns or lives in this house. All three of you denied being that person. Conclusion, one of you is a liar.
I
hardly expected a full immediate confession. However, we are absolutely isolated here. No one is going to come or leave until we have our killer.
You know, you can't really keep us here.
The flood can and will. Remember, the bridge is no longer. So you see, just the five of us alone. No one else inside the house, no one outside. Therefore...
Correction, Mr. Wolf.
Maybe it's a branch or something tapping against the door.
Unlikely. Archie.
Okay, I'll go see who or what it is.
Oh, hey!
What? I got him. Somebody shut the door.
Yeah, all right, I get it.
A disreputable and unwashed gentleman, head badly hurt. Is he conscious, Archie?
I don't know. He's mumbling something.
Legs pushed off. Fell from the ledge.
He's passed out. I guess he was trying to say that somebody pushed him out on a ledge. The side of the cliff, maybe. He must have regained consciousness and crawled to the house. Where'll I put him, Mr. Wolf?
Well, you'll need first aid. We can't get a doctor. Cregan, where are the bedrooms?
Yeah, one right up at the head of the stairs. And don't ask me how I happen to know.
We shan't, Archie.
Okay. I'll need somebody to help me carry him up without shaking him too badly.
Cregan?
Okay. Let's go.
As for the rest of you, Mr. Wagner, Miss Shirley, I suggest we return to the living room.
But I don't see any reason why we should take orders from you.
One of you is a murderer. I include Mr. Cregan, of course.
Oh, but that poor man wasn't dead.
Not for lack of trying. However, I was not referring to him.
You mean someone else has been killed?
Precisely. That is why I hope we shall not hear another knocking at the door. It could only be a corpse. Archie.
And Cregan.
Yeah.
The injured man?
Still out. Probably got a concussion.
Did he say anything further?
Well, he babbled a bit. I don't know if...
We should assume we're among friends, Archie. Exactly what did he say?
Well, he was pushed over the edge of the cliff because he saw Miller killed.
Did he also see who?
No, passed out before he had a chance. He's an old tramp, Mr. Wolf. He was bumming his way through the country when he saw the murder.
He must have decided on a touch of blackmail and receiving a concussion instead, which may last for hours or for days.
Somebody's playing with the lights.
Some fool.
Yeah, the switch was over this way. Lights are on again. Whose idea was that?
I had nothing to do with this.
Me neither.
Miss Shirley, why did you scream?
Well, someone brushed against me in the darkness.
You were standing?
Near the table, this table.
Archie?
No, nothing on the table except a bunch of keys on a ring.
Something screwy. Why should a guy put the lights out just to deposit a bunch of keys on a table?
Obvious. Without doubt, those are the keys of this house. Possession of them would have disclosed which of you lives here and which of you therefore killed Miller. It's late. I shall sleep down here, lacking an elevator to transport me upstairs.
The elevator's lacking.
Yes, the rest of you should be able to find bedrooms upstairs. Good night. Yeah, Archie.
Yeah?
Follow them upstairs. Spend the night awake.
Okay.
Good heavens, Archie.
On my way.
What was that?
I don't know. What's cooking up here?
Somebody's playing with the lights up.
Strike a match.
You don't have to. I got a flashlight.
Oh, yeah. Oh, here it is. Light switch. You know, this putting out of lights is getting to be somebody's bad habit. Well, all three of you seem to be okay. Stay here.
Where are you going?
Tramp's room, right here at the head of the stairs. Think of all your good deeds while I'm gone. All right, downstairs again.
What a gem.
Oh, dear.
What happened?
Well, it was more than a bunch of keys this time.
Oh, that knife. There's blood on it.
There should be. I just pulled it out of a man's heart.
Wow.
Well, Mr. Wolf, one of these three babies doused the lights, popped into the tramp's room, deposited the knife in his chest, and popped right out again.
The knife you're holding?
Yeah.
Intelligent of you to wrap a handkerchief around the handle.
Well, whoever killed the tramp didn't have time to fool around with gloves, so...
There should be prints on the knife handle. Satisfactory, Archie.
That's mild enthusiasm.
Archie, on that desk, an ink pad.
Yeah.
Miss Shirley, You carry face powder, of course?
Yes, I do.
Archie will need it to bring out the prints on the knife. He will then fingerprint each of you. Compare your prints with those on the knife, and we shall have a murderer to hand over to the police. Archie, will you begin, please?
Here they are, Mr. Wolf. Three cards labeled with Miss Shirley's name, Cregan's, and Wagner's. Their respective prints are on each card.
Good. I have the knife here. Several quite distinct prints on it. It should be child's play to, Archie.
Yeah?
Take your own prints and mine.
What?
Do as I say, quickly.
Yes, sir. All right, give me your thumb. Thank you. That's it. Now mine. Thank me.
There's something wrong. Something wrong and deadly loose in this house tonight.
Well, there's a card with your prints in mine.
Thank you.
Now you got five cards all together.
So I have. Archie.
What now?
Take the ink pad and a fresh card with you.
Where am I going with them?
Upstairs.
But, Mr. Wolf, there's nobody upstairs except the corpse.
Precisely. It is his prints I want.
This is so ridiculous.
Oh,
I'm tired of this.
Archie?
Yeah, I got the dead man's prints.
Will all of you please sit?
All right, but...
Good heavens, young woman. Be careful. We want no accidents.
Sorry, I caught my high heels in the rug.
Archie, the card with the corpse's prints on it.
Hey, yes, sir.
Thank you.
You know, I've had quite enough of this nonsense.
Have you, Mr. Wagner?
Yeah, and so have I, Mr. Wolf. Also, I don't think you know what you're doing.
Perhaps not. However, I have something rather interesting to tell all of you. There is no one in this house besides yourselves, except, of course, for the dead man upstairs. There is no one on the rock on which this house stands, except for another dead man in our car.
Look, we already know all that.
Bear with me. We may rule out secret passages, unusual hiding places, or anything of that esoteric and childish nature. We may also rest assured that no one has come to or left this house or rock within the last few hours.
Well, that means we're kind of hermetically sealed here, huh? Meaning also that whoever was here when the tramp was killed is still here. Still here in this room.
Correct, Archie. Now then, I have checked the dead tramp's prints against those on the knife. Theoretically, suicide was possible. However, the prints do not match.
That guy was in no condition to kill himself anyway.
True. And I checked Archie's prints and mine against those on the knife. No similarity.
Oh, but no one suspected either of you.
Thank you, but I had to be thorough. That left only the three of you. I compared your cards and the prints on them with the prints on the handle of the knife.
And?
I want you to remember one thing very clearly. We are the only living people in this house or on this rock of land. No tricks are possible and may be ruled out.
All right, so what?
This. The prints on the handle of the knife that pierced the heart of the man upstairs do not match his prints or the prints of anyone in this room.
Mine wouldn't match.
Would you mind saying that again?
He doesn't have to. And those cards, Mr. Wolf, has the prints of everybody here. And yet none of them match the prints on the knife handle.
But, well, in that case, who or what killed him?
Why, there must be someone else in the house.
I give you my word, there is not.
Hey, you thinking about ghosts or something?
Ghosts never leave fingerprints.
I've got to get away. I can't stand this.
Me too. Come on, lady.
But I'll come along with you, if you don't mind.
Mr. Wolf.
Let them go. The bridge is down. They can't get far.
Okay. I don't get it.
Get what?
Well, the fingerprint business. And who killed Miller plus the tramp?
The identity of the killer, Archie, is quite obvious.
It is? To who?
To whom?
Who's whom? That's a joke. Yeah, I'm stalling for self-respect. You know?
Of course I do. I have no conclusive proof, however. I had hoped the fingerprints would be of assistance there, but... they proved to be phantoms.
I'm still smarting about the other thing. You know, it's at times like this that I almost agree with you about my intelligence.
Lack of intelligence?
Yeah, well, don't rub it in. Don't rub it in. Just go ahead. Yeah, well, maybe you better rub it in. From now on, you may refer to my brain in the negative.
In the negative? Bless you, Archie.
What I've just done, I don't know, but can I have a raise?
No.
I'll take it back.
You can't. Get the others in at once.
Mr. Wolf, you now have the appearance of Mr. Wolf being surrounded by several dozen bottles of beer. What have I done?
You've explained the fingerprints, Archie. Hurry. I don't want to keep the killer in suspense.
I
don't care. No, I'm very nervous. I don't like
this. Archie, they're all here. Yes, but they're all making a noise. Stop them.
Miss Shirley, Mr. Cregan, Mr. Wagner, will you please shut...
Mr. Wolf, they have.
Thank you, Archie. Now then, I have known for some little time which of you killed the tramp and Miller. I lack proof, however.
And you have it now?
I will admit for a while I was flummoxed by the negative evidence of the fingerprints. They seem to indicate that the tramp was murdered by a phantom. However, the word negative itself has solved the minor problem.
Minor to who?
To whom? Never mind. Shh.
Archie, what is the salient feature of a film negative?
Well, I suppose it's the fact that the darks are light and the lights are dark. Huh?
Precisely. A reversal, then, of the actual appearances. Now, are there any similarities between filmed images and fingerprints?
Oh, in a way. You could call the whorls and hollows that determine the individual characteristics of a fingerprint the lights and darks, huh?
You could. I shall. Miss Shirley, would you help in an experiment?
Well, of course.
Thank you. Archie, I want you to take Miss Shirley's fingerprints once again.
Okay. Pad and card. Here you are, Miss Shirley.
All right.
Now, Archie, quick.
Huh?
Grab her arm.
I got it. Well, usually I don't have to be coached, but...
Let go of me. What are you trying to do?
Miss Shirley, you already had pressed your fingers on the ink pad once. Why were you about to do it a second time?
Well, I just wanted to make a better impression.
Truly. Archie, wipe some of the ink off her fingers.
Oh, but then it won't be any good.
It'll be very good, Archie.
I've done it.
And take the prints.
No, let go of me.
Maybe. I never hurt women if I can help it, but right now I won't be able to help it. Mr. Wolf wants your prints all over again, so down on the nice white card.
No.
There, thanks.
Will you let me have that card now, Archie?
Sure.
In the meanwhile, hold on to Miss Shirley.
A pleasure.
Indeed? Would you continue to think so, Archie, if I told you that Miss Shirley's first name is not Peg, but happens to be Josephine, for which the diminutive is Joe?
Glad they're fixing the bridge. I was beginning to think we'd be here forever.
Truly, we have been.
You know, if those black orchids have been holding their breath waiting for you, they're going to be red in the face. Hey, new breed, red orchids, huh?
Archie, must you talk?
Well, it's fun. Also, you've been holding out on me about the case.
I surrender.
Okay. You know, when we compared the new prints of Josephine with those on the knife, you could have knocked me over with a sash weight. They were identical.
Naturally. She stabbed the tramp.
Yeah, but what was the fingerprint gag?
She merely loaded her fingers so heavily with ink that she falsified the markings. She filled up the hollows and walls with ink. The result was that ridges became hollows and vice versa. In the same fashion that a photographic negative falsifies lights and darks.
You got that when I mentioned the word negative. It works, huh?
Try it sometime.
Yeah, the very next bank I rob. But you said you knew who killed Miller and the tramp even before you exposed the fingerprint gimmick. How?
We knew Miller's murderer lived in this house. Had been stealing from him and so on.
Uh-huh.
Stealing what? Cash, of course. He, as the girl admitted, was an eccentric, kept his money on the property. Cregan had probably heard of it, hence his casing of the house.
Yeah?
Our problem, therefore, was to discover who lived in this house. All three suspects denied it. Josephine Shirley told us, as you may remember, that she'd gone for a walk and then been driven by the flood to this house where we found her.
Well, that's what she said it could have been.
No, because as you may also remember, she tripped at one point over the living room rug and mentioned why.
Sure, she said she was wearing high heels. Because out in the country there are no pavements, so girls don't go for a walk in high-heeled shoes. Therefore, she hadn't gone for a walk. Therefore, she was lying. Therefore, she killed Miller and... I should have noticed those heels myself.
You should have, Archie. Your trouble, I suspect, was that you didn't notice the feet for the legs.
have been listening to The New Adventures of Nero Wolfe, starring Sidney Greenstreet. Tonight's transcribed story was based on the characters created by Rex Stout. This is an Edwin Fadiman program produced and directed by J. Donald Wilson. In the cast were Gerald Moore as Archie Goodwin and G.G. Pearson, Howard McNear, Tim Graham, and Eddie Fields. Next week at this same time, Nero Wolfe and Archie will bring you The Case of the Vanishing Shells. Don Stanley speaking. Three chimes mean good times on NBC.
That's it for this week. We'll be back next week with more old-time radio. I hope you can join us then. Till then, this is Jim Dolan thanking you for listening.